Welcome to the Flanagan Dialogues, an occasional podcast featuring ethics discussions by Dr. Rosemary Flanagan with Dr. Terry Rosell, who holds the Rosemary Flanagan Chair at the Center for Practical Bioethics. In this edition of the Flanagan Dialogues, Sister Rosemary and Terry talk together about how her views on end-of-life and advanced care planning might have changed after suffering and surviving a heart attack early in 2012.
Dr. Flanagan.
Dr. Rosell.
We are going to have a dialogue. And what I'd like to ask you is what you're thinking now after about 15 years later from when an article was published that we have talked about quite a bit over the years. It was titled The Most Solemn Moment of My Living and published in the Bioethics Forum. I don't have the year here, but you were 71 at that time. And how old are you now?
85, almost 86.
Almost 86, so about 15 years ago.
Uh-huh.
And something happened between then and now. But let me read just a little bit.
I love this. Oh,
let me read just a little bit here about what you wrote, because it was rather provocative. The most solemn moment of my living, and you started off by saying, it makes me mad. Mm-hmm. That gets my attention.
Mm-hmm.
It makes me mad. There is a pervasive assumption out there that should I, one day, have a coronary infarct, I would want to be resuscitated. That is simply not true. I am 71 years old and in good health. You go on to talk about some scientific data about resuscitation. And then you write, so when I am doing what I enjoy doing and am fortunate enough to suffer an infarct rather than a slow and painful death from cancer or ALS or the darkening of Alzheimer's, then I want to be let go.
Mm-hmm.
And then something happened to you about 3 or 4 months ago.
Uh-huh. And what it did not change my opinion. I want everybody to know that the Flanagan who wrote that article is still the same Flanagan. But it made me reflect on how careful we must be in our advance directives and the importance that the surrogate decision maker the importance of that surrogate decision maker to understand the mind of the person he or she is listening to.
Okay, so but what happened? What happened to cause you to reflect on
that? I was at church one morning, which is very edifying, I think, fainted, and when I came to, my pulse was being taken by a retired physician who kept taking it all during the rest of Mass and who followed me home with another guy driving me because they told me that I was having a heart attack, which I was not aware of. I respected their superior wisdom, walked in the apartment and told the sister I live with that I was told by a retired physician to call my doctor and tell him what happened that morning, which she did because I'm not so good on the phone with my ears. And the receptionist said, I get to the ER now.
So you had driven to church.
Oh, yes, I had driven to church.
And then the doctor or somebody drove you home.
Home.
And then you walked and told you
I had a heart attack. So and when we got to the hospital, then she drove me. On the way, I had to have her stop because I had to throw up. And that was unusual for me. The fainting was unusual.
Yeah.
And that was unusual. But I, who had been taught about the pains of a heart attack, I had no such pains. Of course, I have heard later that women having heart attacks are very different from men having heart attacks. So when I got to the hospital, to the emergency room, they said I was in the process of having a heart attack. And within 40 minutes, I had had a stent installed. I spent 2 days in the hospital. I came home with a week and a half in which I could do nothing and thought, if this is going to be the rest of my life, I don't like this. And since that time, I've done cardiac rehab, and I'm back with my normal living.
So you'd have to qualify your statement to indicate the sort of infarct that you would have in order for this advanced directive in an essay to actually go into effect. So you didn't have a good enough infarct.
Oh, exactly. See, exactly. And I didn't understand the depth of the meaning of what was going on. Mm-hmm. I did not. When I made the statement in that article, I presumed that at some old age, having an infarct meant that I passed out and I wasn't going to come back, and that I was going to be in a vegetative state for the rest of the time. There is so much that we people who do not have medical backgrounds don't understand about our own bodies. Now, I live with this.
Including then degrees of heart attack.
True. Yeah. Oh, and that sometimes this surrogate who is listening to us as we have our advanced directive form in front of us, and we're having that conversation, which is so important, and I cannot tell you how very important I think that conversation is, or that series of conversations, that person has got to be an active listener. That person can't just listen to me rant and rave the way it sort of sounded on that article.
It's a wonderful rant and rave, though. It gets your attention.
I know.
Yeah.
But I am dictatorial to this day that if I were to have an infarct, and the meaning of infarct, which I used to think I understood, now is very foggy. What I mean is that if there is indication I am not going to come back, then let me go.
That was our conversation when we shared an office here at the Center for Practical Bioethics. And we had the conversation actually on the podium in front of a whole large group of caregivers at some conference as well. How would I know?
How would you?
I'm not a physician, Rosemary.
Yeah.
And so, what do I know other than to call 911 and start administering CPR? How do I know this one isn't like the last one?
Exactly. That, and I come back.
So what does this mean for me anymore?
Does this mean?
Because we came to sort of an agreement where I said to you, as you recall, Sister Rosemary, I've read your article, but as we're sitting here in our office, if you suddenly go down, I don't know if
That's
I can do this.
That's right. That's right.
And you said,
I live with, who is my substituted or my surrogate decision maker, she didn't know either.
Okay.
Now, the wonderful thing about this experience, so that I can reflect back on it, we can have this wonderful beginning podcast of Roselle and Flanagan arguing with one another. The wonderful thing is I did not lose capacity. So I was out for a terribly short time in church.
Right. So you're fainting.
I faint. That's all. It was just a faint. And you come out of a faint and
with your capacity intact, sure.
And I didn't faint anymore after that.
Yeah.
And so, but It's the interpretation of what you say that makes the role of the surrogate decision maker so important. This sister I live with, who's a PhD microbiologist, and she knows the human condition a heck of a lot better than I do. She now says that in church, those fellows ought to have called 911.
Now, yeah, that was a little surprising to me that you walk, you have a heart attack.
True.
They drove you home. That was wonderful.
True, but I walked to the car, and I walked into the apartment on my own, and I opened my own door. They didn't walk in with me. And what was that? I was so insistent. They wanted to call the ambulance, and I was so insistent.
And you said no.
They listened to me. And
they were respecting your autonomy.
Yeah, they were.
Well-trained physician.
Even the retired physician, who probably had been with thousands of people in his practice life who had died on him.
So respecting your autonomy was potentially dangerous to you.
Potentially dangerous, and wasn't it wonderful that it wasn't dangerous?
Yeah, yeah.
Because they admit now that upon reflection, they ought to have overridden my wishes. It
okay,
would have been
their
safer.
Medical paternalism.
That's right. Oh, sure.
And still a
kindness
virtue.
And goodness and trying to do the right thing and not listening to this wild and woolly old nun. They should have called. And so, you know, this is a marvelous case for having us reflect on how important those conversations are in clarifying your wishes in an advance directive, especially in the two extremes. The two extremes are, I want you to do everything so I'll never die, and let me go. It's time. Let me go. Those are two extremes, and I would hope that my surrogate decision maker, I would hope that she would err on the side of caution.
What would that mean?
Yes, exactly. She now says she should have called an ambulance instead of driving me over to the hospital, although we live so close to the hospital it couldn't have taken more than 5 minutes. For her sake, I'm very happy that I didn't die en route or whatever, but I didn't. Then I think I would have been terribly embarrassed to have the ambulance come for me, because I felt so normal. I felt so good. I wasn't having those pains that I associated with a heart attack.
And yet you had occlusion to
to the widowmaker.
It was
that major that they call the widowmaker. Mm-hmm. It was that major artery,
left anterior descending, or something like that.
Blood vessel, and it was blocked. Of course, we found all those things out later. I think the important thing in an advance directive, when you're having that conversation with the surrogate, is that there is a position of trust that's established with that surrogate. I have said to my surrogate decision maker, I trust whatever decision you make. So if I were to have another infarct or have a whatever, and she were to have called the ambulance, and she were to say yes to all the interventions, and I never emerged the Rosemary Flanagan who I am now, I will not hold that against her when we get up to heaven. We've got to have trust that the surrogate, acting always in light of what she knows about the decision maker, but in gray areas, without clarity, like you in that office back there, and you didn't know whether or not I was going to come out of it. That we trust the goodwill of the person making the decision.
Do the best we can.
Pardon?
And do the best we can.
And do the best that you can. Yeah. I think the attempt in the last years, the last 20, 30 years, to bring the patient, the passivity of patient in our thought processes, in our language, has been so radically overcome, where the patient now sometimes feels that he or she's in charge of the whole thing, and they can tell the caregivers exactly what to do. And so I think it's gone to the opposite extreme. But when we have tried to move that patient from being recipient to being part of the process of what is taking place, and being to some extent in charge of whether or not what processes will be effected on him or her, I think that it has caused a lot of confusion. I think a lot of people will not fill out advance directives because they're afraid that their surrogate decision makers will let them go too soon, or that their surrogate decision makers will not understand the gist of what they're talking about. So
is your article an example, illustrative of a shift that you think is happening more broadly, that where 15 years ago you were writing a very respect autonomy like essay?
Oh, I am.
And are you saying
I am in charge at all times?
Right.
And that is not true, because I am not in charge when I am ignorant.
Hmm.
So I didn't know back then, 15 years ago, that you can emerge from one of these incidents, medical incidents, in as good a shape as I have emerged. I think back then I was, I saw the infarct that happened and the subsequent unconsciousness. I'd always say, just let me lie on the floor and drool. I knew that was all. I wasn't going to be dead, but I knew that was a step in my dying. And I didn't want that step not to be treated as a step. I wanted people to know, I'm beginning to die. Let me continue the process. I don't think I realized that there's dying and dying, and that necessarily having this heart attack or having this whatever was as imminent a condition of dying as I have come to see. It wasn't imminent. Could have been, but it wasn't.
Right. So what I am learning from your experience also is that in my advance directives, in my conversations as well, and in ours, we don't want to name a sort of disease state or incident because there's so much variation on that. Even people who I swear in ICU look like they are already dead. A week later, I come back and they're talking to me. So it's more a matter of when I have entered a state into which you are quite sure I am not coming back.
Yes.
Then don't keep me just going in that state.
That's right. That's right.
Don't prolong my dying.
And will that take time? Yes.
To ascertain.
To ascertain death. Yes. And
so, time and expertise.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And I don't have that.
Mm-hmm.
So now I still have the problem.
True. And your wife may
I don't have the time or the expertise or your surrogate or mine.
Mm-hmm.
So then are we simply left with call 911?
I know. And I don't know if it's an either or. Now, try to get out of that one, Flanagan. When my incident happened, my good luck piece was that I regained consciousness so soon. I came right out of the faint. Okay. And I never lost consciousness again. But what if I hadn't come out of it? What would I have expected of those people in church? I would have expected the automatic call 911. Bingo. So that when my surrogate got the word that I was in the emergency room at St. Joe's, where I ended up of my own volition, but because of somebody else's volition, and I would expect that she would go over there and then watch the process unfold before she stepped in to say, keep on going, or to say, stop. The keep on going is the way that emergency rooms go into operation. And so it would do, 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 do. I have a good friend of mine who watched his wife die of cancer. And although it took months, he told me that they felt in that process, like that emergency room process, they felt there was no time that they could say, hold it just a minute, and let's evaluate whether or not we want to keep this going. They just felt caught up on the treadmill of healthcare delivery.
Mm.
And she died. It was terrible, and it was painful, and it was all the... I would hope that my surrogate would determine some place to do that reflection before the months have gone by and I haven't come out of it and they still are doing more and more stuff. Maybe what I'm asking for, and maybe this is something we should think about the next time we talk about this, when one says, let me go, what do I hope precedes that decision on the part of my surrogate decision maker?
In terms of your condition?
That's right. Okay. And in terms of her knowledge and what the medical people are telling her and what she suspects and what she knows for sure, and just a whole congeries of ifs and certainties and uncertainties. Healthcare is going to be... healthcare is so expensive. We're trying to make it less expensive. At the very time we're saying so much money is being spent in the last few months of life, is there any way that we can cut back on that? And I think yes, but it depends so much on us who are in that dying to have talked about what what is important to us to keep us living and what is important for them to know that it's time to say it's over.
So talking about values, what really matters
absolutely.
At this point
absolutely.
In my life.
That's right.
Yeah.
That's right.
So I think what I will do, and maybe we should wrap up this part of the conversation, I will not rip up your essay
as an
advanced directive that has no merit whatsoever, but I'll write on here, amended.
Yes. Yes.
By experience.
Amended by more conversation. And I have to amend it. I, the writer of it, I have to amend it by more experience.
Yes.
Sometimes our surrogate's experience can arouse in us a whole new way of looking at things. And I think that it's the role of the surrogate to ask those questions and to make us think. But let us continue this later.
Good. Thank you.
Thank you.
You've been listening to the Flanagan Dialogues, a production of the Center for Practical Bioethics. For more information about the center and its programs, visit practicalbioethics.org. practicalbioethics.org. Thanks for listening to the Flanagan Dialogues.